Hello, everybody, and welcome to part two of The Cryptid Iceberg. Hopefully you've already seen part one of the series, and if you haven't, the link to that will be in the description. And if you're caught up, we can go ahead and get into it. However, there's one thing I need to change about this series before we start. I did manage to get in contact with the creator of the iceberg, and he informed me that the version I've been working with was the prototype for the full and true iceberg. And after looking into some of the stuff he added, I am frankly out of my depths. Like I mentioned in part one, the guy who made this works at the Cryptozoology Museum. He has firsthand experience with several of the people and literature that's conducive to the field of cryptozoology that I'll never really understand. Or at least never understand the proper way in the time frame I plan to make this series. So to make this easier on everyone, and hopefully to make a better series for you all, in this video I'm going to be diverging from the iceberg that he made, and instead building out my own iceberg. It will be similar in length to the original one I began covering, only this one is going to have even more cryptids. Or basically cryptids in place of things on the iceberg that weren't cryptids. Because frankly, I'm here to talk about the scary stuff. I'm here to talk about the monsters. And while all of the supplemental material is incredibly interesting, I don't want to give myself a remedial crash course in it and then throw it to you off the cuff with a lot of wrong information. So we're going to keep it to the spooky stuff. Beginning in tier 2, I'm going to switch up some of the stuff in the original iceberg to throw in more creatures. And for the rest of the series, we're going to keep it to the things that I want to talk about and hopefully you all want to hear. And then when the creator of this original iceberg has finished his version of it, I'll be sure to shout out either his YouTube channel or the iceberg image itself and make sure he gets credit for the work and inspiration that he's given me. This probably sounds really confusing right now, but by the time this full iceberg is done and I make the compilation of it, it's all going to run together as one piece. Don't worry about it. Just pretend like the last video and this video are two tiers of this new iceberg. And because of that, that means I get to do this. Because now, if the iceberg is just terms I want to talk about, we don't need all of that supplemental material. There's still some stuff that aren't cryptids that I want to talk about, like the coelacanth and the sea serpent, which I've got down here. But now we can streamline this whole thing to just those that go bump in the night. Also, one thing I want to mention from the last video. A bunch of you in the comments were yelling at me that the reason the thylacine, or thylacine, or however you want to pronounce it, is on this iceberg is because despite the fact that it went extinct in 1930s, according to our textbooks, several sightings of it still appear across the Australian continent. So fine, because it's technically an animal that doesn't officially exist, but sightings of it are still out there, I'll give you that it is a cryptid. But if I have to give you that, then I give you this. F tier, that is a stupid cryptid. Real sad that it died sad and alone in a zoo or whatever. But the whole cryptid is there was an animal that existed 90 years ago that we think died out. But maybe it didn't die out. And to that I say, yeah, maybe it didn't. Who knows? Who cares? Because we're talking about flying moth people and giant ape things that smell bad. So you and your cat dog can run back to the McDonald's play place because the adults are talking. So yeah, critique me again, come at me again. I will immediately throw you in F tier. Also, a few people online, especially Twitter, I'm looking at you, Smoo, were getting mad at me for putting like the Yeti and the Skunk Ape or the Kraken at B tier. Okay, I don't know if you know this, but C is the middle of the line. S tier doesn't count. S is like supreme, whatever. There's only one thing up there right now. Look at it as great, good, mid, bad, awful, right? So B is still a good cryptid. I still like it. C is the middle of the road. Just because something's B tier doesn't mean it's bad. And if you keep talking, I will take every one of these down. It's my pointless YouTube series. I'll rank it how I want. And also, as you saw in the intro, it is finally time for him. That is right. I now introduce to you the second edition of the Wendigoon U2's figure. We sold the first version of this guy last year, and you all enjoyed it so much, I figured, why not bring it back for the holiday season? And as you can see, U2's pretty much let me do whatever I want. He's got the stag skull and the night vision, but he also has a shotgun with a lantern tied to the barrel, for some reason. Why would he use a kerosene lantern and night vision? I don't know, but it looks cool. I am so happy with how this guy turned out, and as a matter of fact, U2's is so happy with him as well, we decided, why stop at just one? Because in addition to this guy, you will also be able to get the U2's Windigoon coffee mug. And check it out. Look how happy he looks. Doesn't that just bring you joy? He's got like the night vision inset eyes and the little deer horns. Funny detail about this. I originally was like, yeah, I want him to have really big deer horns. And then U2's was like, that's probably a bad idea because, you know, that's directly where your eyes are when you're drinking. So wiser minds prevailed and he's just got the little ones. But this guy, he's still got the pointy ones. I'm so happy with how this pair turned out, and hopefully you are as well. Both of these guys are available for a very limited amount of time. Like, before Christmas, they're going to be gone for good. And the pre-order for these dudes is right now, and once that pre-order is, they're gone forever. So if you're interested in either or both of them, head down to the link in the description and get in on it while you can. And just as a disclaimer, I want to make it clear that while I am selling this for the holiday season, and I think it's a great gift for the holiday season, this is a pre-order. These things go through manufacturing, quality control, all of that. So even though you order it in December, they're probably not going to ship till like end of February, early March. So if you are getting this as a Christmas gift for someone, just be sure that they understand the concept of object permanence. But I am thrilled with how this turned out. Hopefully you guys are as well. Again, link to them will be in the description. Get in while you can. Without further ado, we are going to go ahead and get into it. But as always, thank you for watching. And sincerely, thank you for the support you've shown on the merchandise, on the extra projects I'm working on. It really does mean the world. So again, thank you. So with that out of the way, let's get into tier 2. Starting with the first entry of this tier, the Dover Demon. The Demon of Dover, Massachusetts was spotted on April the 21st, 1977. Bill Bartlett was driving through the back roads near town when he spotted a creature with large eyes, a bulbous head, and tendril fingers atop a broken stone wall. A total of 3 sightings occurred around town that night and the night of the 22nd. Bill drew a sketch of what he saw and added the message, "I, Bill Bartlett, swear on a stack of Bibles that I saw this creature." Lauren Coleman investigated the sightings and named the creature the Dover Demon. Despite only 2 days of suspected sightings, the demon has become a mainstay among cryptid communities. Because of the Dover Demon's appearance, a lot of people associate it with extraterrestrial alien encounters, but others just say he's a weird little guy with a big head. Well, there were a few sightings in the days around Bill Bartlett's encounter, but because stories are so scarce, we don't have a lot of information as to how the cryptid works or how many there might be. But overall, he's pretty popular and I get the appeal. So I'm gonna put him at B tier. After that, we've got the Fresno Nightcrawlers. These bizarre creatures were first spotted in 2007 when a man from Fresno, California brought footage from his home security camera to the police. This footage depicts what can only be described as a walking pair of white pants moving across the front lawn. In 2011, a similar sighting occurred at Yosemite National Park. Several sightings have occurred in the years since, with some stretching all the way to Poland. Given the unassuming nature of the creature and its harmless appearance, many have attributed a timid, friendly visage to the Nightcrawler. Because of this, the Fresno Nightcrawler, though mysterious, is a legend far more beloved than feared. The cryptid community typically sees the Fresno Nightcrawler as like a little puppy that just needs to be protected. And while some of the stories around it do get across kind of a mysterious X-Files feel, like for example, there's one story where a man had a patch of grass in his front yard that regardless of what the season was, if it had rained, if it had snowed, it was always a bright green, dry patch of grass and you never knew why. And then one night he goes out at like 2 o'clock in the morning to see the Fresno Nightcrawler standing there, kind of implying it's this entity outside of time or space that affects the area around it. I mean, that's kind of creepy, but I mean, it's like a walking U shape that most people depict as fuzzy. My wife has little statues of it all over the house because she thinks it's cute. So not that terrifying, not that much definitive lore, but people like it and I get why. So it's going to B tier. Up next, we have the Megalodon. The Megalodon, or Big Tooth, is a now extinct species of super shark. This shark, suspected by science to be extinct for over 3 million years, could grow up to 70 feet in length and weigh over 100 metric tons. Of course, this has sparked speculation that the creature may not be extinct at all. Given discoveries like the coelacanth, science has been wrong about supposedly non-existent species before. And given the mysterious nature of the ocean and food chains within the deep exhibiting symptoms of unknown super predators, the legend of the megalodon continues to haunt the seas. The megalodon has quickly worked its way into the cultural lexicon as of late. Like, you could go up to any random Joe on the street who doesn't know anything about Fresno nightcrawlers or Dover demons, but you could ask him about Bigfoot or the megalodon and he'll probably know what you're talking about. And it makes sense, right? Like, the megalodon piques the natural curiosity of just our understanding of the sea. We know that things can get really big and we know that they can get really lethal. So the megalodon is the natural conclusion of that with things like sharks, a creature that's already widely feared. That combined with discoveries of giant teeth, as well as the mystery of the ocean itself, it makes sense why the legend is so widespread. That being said, big shark. So it's going to B tier. After that, we have the Mongolian death worm. This elusive beast is said to stalk the Gobi Desert. According to local legend, the death worm is a flat, blood-red worm that slithers beneath the sands of Mongolia and can grow up to 3 feet in length. Many stories include mention of an extremely lethal venom, hence the creature's name, and some even mention projectile venom and electrical capabilities. The wider world learned of the worm in 1926 when the Prime Minister of Mongolia was quoted while describing it. The legend is widespread across the Gobi, and despite the lack of evidence, it seems the people of the area are consistent in their belief, implying an unknown serpent may exist beneath the sea of sand. This one's always fascinated me, because the desert itself, much like the ocean, is a mysterious wasteland, at least to us. We know that there are creatures that can survive there, but it is so inhospitable to humanity that the thought of it is uncanny in itself. So if the ocean has its legends of serpents and monsters beneath the waves, then the sand deserves it as well. And also the idea that there's just these worms that can shoot venom or electrocute you, and then if it kills you, it like shakes your body underneath the sand to be consumed, that's terrifying. And also the desert itself is so big, if a creature can exist beneath the sand, who knows how many things could be down there that we haven't charted yet. And it leads many researchers to say, if this many otherwise unrelated cultures across the desert have the same stories that corroborate off the other, maybe they're onto something. It's scary, it's elusive, it's well-defined, so it's going at A tier. Next up, we've got the Ogopogo. The Ogopogo is the lake monster of the Okanagan Lake of British Columbia. The legend comes from the native legend of the Naitaka, a fierce spirit that only allowed safe passage across the lake if a blood sacrifice was made. However, with sightings beginning in the early 1900s, the spirit now held the reputation of a physical form. The name Ogopogo was given in 1924, and the creature is described as dark green with the head of a reptile and lengths up to 50 feet. This serpent is said to move incredibly fast, and despite rewards in the millions for definitive proof, no conclusive evidence has been found. This menacing monster remains a mystery to this day. It's always interesting to me when legends existed before a culture's documentation of it, and then that culture's documentation corroborates off what was previously said. The natives had a legend of a giant beast in the lake, and then in the 1900s, sightings began happening of a giant beast in the lake. Also, it's hilarious to me that the natives were like, oh, it's, you know, this dark spirit that is supposed to be respected. As a matter of fact, we made sacrifices to it. It's not to be messed with. And then the French settlers get there and they're like, oh, the Ogopogo. All that being said, it is once again another big Loch Ness monster adjacent creature in the middle of a lake. So the Ogopogo is going to hang out at D tier with Champy. Now, let's talk about the Lizard Man. In Lee County, South Carolina, there exists a legend of a beast who roams the scape or swamp. In 1988, reports began appearing around the swamp of a creature attacking those who leave their cars late at night. The thing was described as being 7 feet tall and possessing glowing red eyes and green, scaly skin. Over the summer of 88, several witnesses recounted the lizard man running at inhuman speeds and with impossible strength, ripping apart the fabric of their vehicles. While the string of sightings was short-lived, the gravity of the stories has existed in the public mind ever since. Nearly every culture has some mythos of a reptilian humanoid, and many believe that one of them may exist in the swamps of South Carolina. The Lizard Man is classic cryptid horror, and I love it. Don't leave your car late at night, or else the Lizard Man will come out of the swamp and kill you, and if you're lucky, he'll only scratch up your vehicle as you drive away. The lore around the Lizardman itself is interesting for a deep dive. There were police investigations in the area into what might be causing this, because cars were showing up to police departments damaged. They had a theory that it may be a cult for a while, or some kind of sick prankster. And despite a massive police search, no evidence was found. Those who do believe in the Lizardman say maybe it was some kind of reptilian humanoid that died after the summer of 88, or simply moved somewhere else. Regardless, it's creepy, it's cool, it's terrifying, so I'm putting it at A tier. There's going to be a lot of people upset, I can already tell, that all of the humanoid stuff for me gets bumped up, and all of like the lake monster serpent stuff goes down. But it's my list, so shut up. But now, let's talk about the Thunderbird. The American countryside is home to this terrifying legend. From the native people of the Great Lakes to the West Coast, the Thunderbird was said to be a powerful spirit, which takes on the visage of a giant bird of prey. This being is believed to be so powerful that it creates thunder by flapping its wings and lightning with its piercing gaze. While not expressly evil, and even benevolent to many tribes, the Thunderbird was believed to punish those who do wrong. Some believe the Thunderbird to be a still-existent species of flying dinosaur, and sightings have continued into the modern age. The Thunderbird's just really cool. There were a lot of stories around the American Civil War of soldiers being out west, and many soldiers claiming to have shot at one or seen one fly down over their camp. A lot of the stories around the Thunderbird of like the Algonquin-speaking tribes of the American Northeast are fascinating, because the Thunderbird is kind of ascribed as a caretaker or governor of the overworld, or of like the realm of spirituality in the air. So it's seen there as more of like a spiritual figure, but in Western legends, it's much more physical, it's much more direct. So it's interesting how the creature worked its way into different cultures, all the way to sightings being reported during modern American history. And also, it's just a cool idea from like a horror perspective as well. Think about the idea of a bird that brings storms whenever it flies. Well, that would be a reason for why you never see it, because have you ever tried to look straight up during a thunderstorm? It could be hard to see, and it uses that cover to fly through the air. It's a fascinating myth. I like the Thunderbird a lot, so it's going to A tier. And keeping with the idea of currently undocumented groups of slightly larger renditions of pre-existing animals, yeah, we have the Orang Pendek. This creature is said to exist within the mountains of western Indonesia. For over a century, sightings of a bipedal primate have been reported in the region. The creature is unique in that no primates of that size are documented in that region. Because of this, many believe the Orang Pendek, or short person, to be a missing link or Bigfoot-adjacent beast. The creature has eluded researchers for some time, yet many believe the mountains of Indonesia to hold the next great biological discovery. So the Orang Pendek is effectively an orangutan seen in an area where we don't think orangutans are. Yeah, that's an F tier. I'm sorry, I just can't. Because when I was researching it, I'm like, oh, are there like no primates in the region? And everyone's like, no, there's a lot of primates in the region. Just no orangutan, so that's why it's a cryptid. And all the stories around it are like, oh no, you don't get it. The creature can be seen walking on two legs. And it's like, yeah, that's what orangutans do. I'm not saying that it is real or they do exist on that island or anything like that. I'm just saying if they do, I don't really care. It's literally just a creature that already exists. Honestly, it feels kind of bad putting it down here with the thylacine, because at least that has some mystery to it. Like, maybe it's not extinct. The orang's like, maybe this thing that we know definitely exists does definitely exist. Just over here. Yeah, maybe in like the 1800s, some sailor thought it'd be funny to drop one off at the island. I don't know. But here, to make it a bit better after giving something F tier, let's talk about a lake serpent thing that I actually like. And that is Caddy. Also known as the Cadborosaurus wilsi, is a sea monster first spotted off the coast of Cadborough Bay, British Columbia in 1933. Described as a horrible serpent with the head of a camel, the creature has been spotted hundreds of times along the shores of Canada. In 1937, a whaling ship in Vancouver discovered an unidentified 20-foot-long corpse within the stomach of a sperm whale. Naturally, many speculated this creature to be the same species as the mysterious Caddy. Given the immense and consistent sightings of the creature, along with the legitimacy of its witnesses, many view Caddy as one of the most compelling examples of modern, undocumented sea monsters. And the Caddy, I do place a lot of legitimacy in, at least compared to some of the other sea monsters we've seen. That's because all the sightings of it feel different than the sightings of other sea monsters. For example, a lot of these will be a guy who was out looking for the Loch Ness Monster, and then he's like, oh, I found the Loch Ness Monster. But most of the sightings of Caddy come from ship captains or politicians. Like, one of the sightings came from a seasoned ship captain who had been in the business for decades, who as soon as he gets to Cadboro Bay, he jumps off the boat and he's like, hey, we saw something really weird out there. And then the description of this creature he gives that he has never heard of matches the legend of Caddy around the region. Not to mention, like I said, a corpse was pulled out of the stomach of a sperm whale that is to this day unidentified. Maybe there was some unidentified species of saltwater pike or sturgeon-esque creature, and maybe the legends around it really mean something. So again, while I typically don't like just take a lake, insert Loch Ness Monster there, the Caddy feels more unique and legitimate than a lot of the others. Now, that being said, I still don't think it's that super cool, because again, just long fish, but I can at least bump it up to the same tier as the Loch Ness Monster. It's also worth mentioning with a lot of these creatures, one of the reasons that I'm not super like, oh yeah, let's bump them up to A, B tier, whatever, even though I think the ocean's scary, stuff like that, is because things like Caddy, yeah, I absolutely believe it could be real, because we have already discovered things like Caddy. Like the oarfish, for example. There were legends for years that there's this super long fish with, like, you know, a red fin on it that can get like 30, 40 feet long. And we're like, haha, that's ridiculous. And then we find it and it's like, oh no, that definitely exists. Like, for example, if we were to discover Mothman or the Jersey Devil or something like that, it would immediately reshape our understanding of biology, of history, of spirituality, of the afterlife in some cases. It would immediately be a cosmic shakeup to everyone on the planet. But if we discover that Caddy or the Ogopogo or Champi are real, then it's just like, wow, that's kind of neat. So forgive me for saying that big fish isn't as cool as Bigfoot. So let's get back to my comfort zone of scary humanoids with the Beast of Bray Road. This creature is often referred to as the Werewolf of Wisconsin. According to local legend, sightings of the beast near Elkhorn, Wisconsin date back to 1936. However, the far more popular appearances occurred in the 80s and 90s, made famous by author Linda Godfrey. Stories arose of a werewolf within the backwoods of Wisconsin. While no one was ever attacked, the beast was said to attack cars and chase those who were away from vehicles. It carries a foul odor and stands 7 feet tall. This menacing creature has solidified its place among America's dark pantheon. The Beast of Bray Road has always had a special place in my heart because I've talked about this before on the channel, but one of my first exposures to these creatures was the Animal Planet series Lost Tapes, and I never thought werewolves were scary. I was just like, okay, it's like a wolf on two legs, who cares? But then I saw some paintings and pictures of how actually menacing a creature like that might be. And the fear of the Wolfman has stuck with me ever since. Now, the story around the actual Beast of Bray Road is pretty cool, because again, the author Linda Godfrey is the one who brought a lot of this to light. According to her, she went to her local police department after hearing stories of these creatures and asked if the police knew anything about it, and the police chief walked into the back of the police department and handed her a file labeled Werewolf. Because the police had so many calls and reports of this creature that they just kept a file of it in the back. And a lot of the legends around the Beast of Bray Road bring out a lot of what I love in modern American horror. The idea of this sleepy small town being terrorized by something going bump in the night. It hits the spot for me where I love the stories around it a lot. So while I would typically say it's just mid, because again, just a werewolf, the legends around it are what make it fun. So I'm bumping it up to B tier. After that, we have the Owlman. The Owlman was first spotted in Cornwall, UK in 1976, when two young girls saw a monster atop the St. Monan and St. Stephen's Church. Author Tony Shields investigated the story and, after receiving a drawing of the creature from one of the young girls, dubbed it Owlman. This figure has massive wings and glowing red eyes and can emit a loud shriek like that of a screech owl. Sightings in the region continued for the next decade, and the haunting presence of the Owlman has existed ever since. Now, you probably heard all that and said, huh, that sounds familiar. And yeah, it really does. The Owlman sightings came a decade after the Mothman sighting, and then a creature was spotted that looked exactly like the Mothman, and some dude from Britain was like, oh, is that an owl? If you're from Britain and you're offended that I did a British impression, knock it off, or else I'll tell them that you didn't pay your TV license. Owlman is instantly F tier for me. It is just a ripoff of this cryptid trying to be special while adding nothing. Next up, we have a personal favorite of mine, the Flatwoods Monster. Also known as Braxy due to its appearance in Braxton County, West Virginia. On September the 12th of 1942, three boys saw a light flash across the sky and land in the woods. After informing four others, including a National Guardsman, the group went into the woods and saw what they described as a tall, red-faced humanoid creature wearing a giant suit that culminated in a spade-shaped dome. After the monster began gliding towards the group, they ran. Since then, some sightings arose and the culture around the creature quickly caught on. The Flatwoods Monster is believed to be an extraterrestrial and is often depicted as a being who landed on Earth before disappearing back into the stars. So the Flatwoods Monster is one of the few cryptids that I have been to the location of in person. I've been to the museum, I've been by the location that the sighting took place. They even have this local challenge in the town where there are five different giant chairs shaped like Braxy located around the county. And if you go take a picture at all five of them, you get a cute little sticker, which I of course did. We even have a lot of Braxy merchandise just around the house. Like this guy is a little lantern that you can turn on. And I love the legend of it a lot. And one of the reasons I love it so much is because of the culture and era that it speaks to. The story itself is drenched in tellings of the era. It's 1942, so there's a National Guardsman in West Virginia ready to go on post who runs out with these boys because maybe it's an attack from Germany or Japan. And then the idea of this giant alien creature inside of a suit of metal speaks heavily to all of the old creature from outer space horror ideas that were present at the time. And the way the legend has shifted over the years, because initially it was believed maybe Braxy was this giant creature, or the Flatwoods Monster as it was called. Maybe it was this creature that was looking to lobotomize you or melt you with a laser gun. But then over the years, the Flatwoods Monster became more of Braxy and just became a story of a creature that got lost on its way home. It's a fascinating legend that has changed and manipulated with the times, and overall, it's scary, it's got a unique story, it's interesting both visually and narratively. So for me, easy S tier. After that, we have the Goatman. While the first recorded records of the Goatman appear in the 1970s, the legends that built the myth are far older. Goatman is described as a creature with the head of a goat and body of a man. Legends of the cryptid begin in the woods of Maryland, in which local legend stated, any caught in the woods at night may be stalked by the dreaded figure. The legend similarly has roots in Louisville, Kentucky, colloquially known as the Public Monster, and Denton, Texas. Stories of its origin vary from that of a science experiment gone wrong to legends of a demon brought up from hell, given its demonic overtones. The Goatman mythos is as long-lasting as it is terrifying. On my podcast, The Red Thread, we spent 2 hours talking about the lore and legacy behind this creature. Link to that's in the description. I won't belabor the same points now. But the short version is it's so interesting how the Goatman is the culmination of all these different strings of culture. It is pieces of biblical belief regarding demons, goats, what have you. It is cultural beliefs of creatures in the woods that might kill you, and then it combines with like the satanic panic movement of, you know, that was happening around like the 70s and 80s and stuff like that. And it's just a really cool story that combines a lot of different stories and ideas into one myth. That being said, the thing that holds it back from being an S tier for me, because otherwise, you know, scary design, cool stories around it, cool appearance, what have you. The thing that holds it back is that it's been very muddled in recent years. Like, it's brought in aspects of skinwalker belief and wendigo belief to create a creature that's, like, partially its own thing, but also takes a lot of stuff from others. So because it's not that unique anymore, I've got to bring it down to A tier, but still, one of my favorite all-time cryptids. And then finally, for tier 2, we have the Wendigo, which, if you couldn't tell by,
all that,
as well as, you know, the name that's down there right now, it's an immediate S tier, but for good reason. The Wendigo, or Wentekawa, is a legend birthed from the cold lands of the Algonquin-speaking tribes of northern North America. According to Cree legend, if any person were to consume the flesh of another human, a dark spirit would possess them. This spirit would contort their body, turning them into an emaciated monster with an insatiable hunger for flesh and skin as that of a frozen corpse. Their body grew cold and their features ghastly, elongated fangs and nails accenting a lipless face among sunken, glowing eyes. These hunters have supernatural abilities of strength and speed and use those abilities to feed on any unfortunate enough to be caught alone in the woods. As the legend grew, it began to mix with aspects of other creatures, adopting the frame of giants in some incarnations and the features of animals it had consumed in others. The Wendigo not only represents a conglomeration of stories told for centuries, but even the definitively real horrors of the time, as many believe the Wendigo mythos to be formed from those who went mad after harsh winters would force them to consume their dead or living family. Stories of the Wendigo have pervaded the American myth for centuries, and the impact of this monstrous entity is undoubtedly all too real. There is a reason I named my channel after this creature. Not only did I grow up with the story, so it's personal to me, but the story itself represents so much. The sort of dark harbinger it originally presented, to never consume the flesh of another. And in some variations of the tale, it was a warning against things like greed or gluttony. It didn't expressly have to be cannibalism. But ultimately, the human condition of needing more. It was a cautionary tale against that. And all of these stories that came out of the time period, men who would eat their family and then say a dark spirit possessed them to do so. There were men who were expressly hired to hunt down and kill these possessed people. And most of the legends around killing them involve either silver or burning the heart of this otherwise cold, dead beast. And then as the story came into the modern age, it mixed with a lot of other cultural beliefs, like how skinwalkers can mimic the voices of their prey, or can put on the skin of things they've killed. This kind of worked its way into the Wendigo mythos. Now, the modern age, you see like the antler imagery everywhere, and that image of it got popularized in modern horror fiction, with stories like Stephen King's Pet Sematary. It is so many different parts of the American mythos all rolled into one. It is as terrifying as it is important, and for those reasons and many more, it is my favorite cryptid. And with that, we have an excellent place to end Tier 2. As I mentioned at the beginning of this video, the iceberg you saw in Part 1 is going to change moving forward. I'll instead be using my own iceberg in the episodes moving forward, and I've already changed this Tier 2 to a large degree. And in the end, this is all to hopefully make better videos for you all. So hopefully you enjoyed it. Hopefully you enjoyed whatever this word vomit was. Thank you for sticking around this long, and I just want to say thank you for watching. I'm really enjoying this series. It feels so good to finally talk about cryptids, something that I've been teasing and wanting to do for a long time. And thank you all so much for sticking around for it. It means the world. Only things I really have to say is, again, this guy, link in the description. Check him out. Available for a very short amount of time, then he's gone forever. Top of the description. Have fun with that if you want. Like I said, the two podcasts, Red Thread, we talked about Goatman. You want to hear more about that? First episode links in the description. And the first episode of Creepcast, if all goes according to plan, should be up tomorrow. So if you're interested, sub to the channel, hit that bell, blah, blah, blah. But Hunter and I would greatly appreciate it if you did. First episode of that should be out tomorrow. Get hyped for that. Hopefully the long timestamp on that video makes up for the past couple short ones I've done. But like I said, this will eventually become a massive, you know, one piece series. I just have to release in parts to follow some kind of upload schedule, because otherwise I'm not going to make a video for a month and a half, come out with it all at once. I figured this is the best way to do it. Also for December, I'm considering making a recut of the Serial Killer Iceberg, an old series I did, adding more visuals, spicing it up a bit, and putting that out. So that may be coming on the way, but the things I can promise are on the way is this guy, the two podcasts, and more episodes of this series. So hopefully you all enjoy and decide to stick around for that. But that should be everything, and I believe that should do it for now. But I just want to say, Thank you for watching. I hope that you enjoyed, and I will see you in the next one.